We're going to talk about the parallel universe, the seven dimensions. Our students of the Quetzalcoatl Cultural Institute from all over the world, welcome. We are here to delve deeper into the subject of the seven dimensions and the internal bodies that human beings can use to be able to develop or to act in each one of those seven dimensions. It is very important that we know that this world in which we live in is not only three-dimensional. Euclid, these Greek mathematicians, tells us about the three basic dimensions of nature, which are length, height, and depth. These three dimensions that we can perceive in everything that surrounds us, but these three dimensions are not the only ones. Human beings have gradually degenerated over time. Unfortunately, we have fallen lower and lower into vices, into negative things and abuses. And all this means that we have lost the senses that we had in other times, in the past. Today, we only have five senses, and these five senses are becoming more and more atrophied. We are no longer able to see the different dimensions of nature, but that does not mean that they do not exist. They do exist, and will continue to exist because they are part of the constitution of the world and the universe. If you remember, in some of our lectures, we have talked about seven fundamental chakras, seven musical notes, seven races, seven human races, and of course, there are also seven dimensions. The world is therefore multidimensional, and seven dimensions form the very basis of nature. These seven fundamental dimensions interpenetrate without ever mixing between them, and we live there without being able to capture, to see, to perceive all of them. We can only see three of the seven dimensions. Our senses only allow us to perceive three. Someone can only observe two dimensions, or can only see the shadows of everything that exists. And someone says, "Hey, look, there are three dimensions. Things are really colorful. They have texture, depth." He wouldn't believe us because his world will only be made of shadows, and he will only perceive shadows. This example really shows us that we perceive things that we only see textures, colors, shapes, but nature is seven dimensional. There are many dimensions in nature, but we can only perceive this physical world or three-dimensional world, the world of Euclid with its three dimensions, because we only perceive the length, depth, and height of things. And it is so. Mathematicians, physicists, wise people have already taught us about the fourth coordinate, a fourth vertical. They found a fourth dimension in their mathematical calculations. Albert Einstein already told us about the hyperspace. We are already beginning to glimpse that there is something else beyond our three-dimensional world. Something else beyond our physical world. So this world, this dimension, planet and everything in the universe is multi-dimensional. Science is far behind on this subject because of their very limited existing instrument that it has to carry out this research. The sages of antiquity were not limited like us. If we don't think a little about the fact that there is a multidimensional world, how can we explain so many things that happens right now in nature and which have no explanation so far? With our intellectual and our reasoning, with all our studies, we try to find explanations which are not entirely satisfactory because we do not contemplate the multidimensionality of nature. We are talking, for example, about this kind of phenomenon that Saint Francis of Assisi showed during his levitations. He floated in the air. He floated over the trees. Let's also talk about Master Jesus, who could walk on the water, and who multiplied loaves and fishes. This obviously is in no way detracts from the mastery of these great beings, like Milarepa, who also floated in the air, or the first disciples of Buddha, who managed to cross the rocks, as well as many other great masters in history, who have managed to perform extraordinary miracles, which are precisely based on this multidimensionality of nature. Let us remember that disappearances of boats, planes, and many other things that have been reported in this famous Bermuda Triangle and in many other places around the world. Caverns suddenly open and people can enter, and they don't come out until a year later, even though for them it only passed like 10 or 20 or 15 minutes. But for us all, it passed like a year or even more. A lot of phenomena like this happen around the world. Let us remember in Honduras and in some places in the world where rains of fish have been seen. Fishes raining. We could not explain all these phenomena without thinking or basing ourselves on the existence of other dimensions of nature. As long as we do not study these dimensions, it will be very difficult for us to explain all these curious phenomena that are happening in the world. We become more and more materialistic, yes, of course. We are more and more skeptical. And this materialism, and this skepticism, devour us entirely, only degenerate us even more and make us lose these latent faculties that we have in ourselves. There was a time when we had much more ability to see colors. In Lemuria, for example, it was possible to see the colors of half Oltapamas. Oltapamas is 5.5 million tons of colors. 5.5 million of tones. The same goes for the sense of smell. The sense has become more and more degenerated, and we have completely lost this power of clairvoyance. We are not talking about this clairvoyance that we are told about on television or of all these people who claim to see, or of these clairvoyants who predict the future for us. No, my dear friends, because we do not agree with these charlatanisms. We talk about the ability that we have lost and that we can regain, and which are not like those shows that we see on TV or those people who only want our money. We are talking about true clairvoyance, which allow us to see the ultra of nature, which is beyond, which allow us to see the fourth dimension and even the fifth dimension. And there are even more faculties, which are even more exhilarating, like the one called the Eye of Dharma, spoken of by the Orientals, which allow us to see the world of the pure spirit. We have completely lost these faculties. They are now atrophied in us. Clairvoyance atrophies, for example, because of hatred, anguish, despair, impatience, because of all the psychological defects of anger, hatred. This faculty of clairvoyance is completely atrophied in us. If we had it, we could perceive nature very differently, see it as it really is. We could synthesize all these faculties into one. It is known as the spatial sense. The spatial sense is the ability to perceive the world in all its different existing dimensions. So, we all have a spatial sense, but it is reduced only to our physical world nowadays. We can only see currently our three-dimensional world, our physical world. It is the only thing we can perceive today, given that our senses are limited, are degenerated, and thus it is our spatial sense is also limited. But our spatial sense could develop if we eliminate the psychological defects that we have within ourselves, like anger, pride, laziness, gluttony, envy, vanity, self-importance, self-sufficiency, mystical pride, etc. If we destroy them, if we pulverize them in our psychology, in our psyche, then our spatial sense will develop gradually. It would allow us to perceive the fourth dimension, also called the etheric world. That is, because we could manage to do, and later, with the development obtained with the death of our defects, we could come to see the fifth dimension or the sixth dimension, and perhaps even the seventh dimension. This is what we could achieve, of course. Those who can perceive the seventh dimension are a great master, for example, Quetzalcoatl, Hermes Trismegistus, Krishna, or Jesus of Nazareth, or Buddha. The rest of us must begin to stop of degeneration so that little by little we can awaken this special sense which will allow us to be able to capture the different dimensions of nature. We could compare ourselves with the animals of nature. For example, there are some kind of lower animals, inferior animals like snails, which only have sensations to interact with the world. They feel that the leaf is dry or that the leaf is fresh and they can eat it. They are lower animals, and we can say that they are one-dimensional animals. They exist in this three-dimensional world, of course, but they only have sensations. There are, of course, animals of superior character, higher animals like the horses, like the cat, the dog, deer, etc. These higher animals not only have sensations, but they also have perceptions. They feel and they perceive the world in a different way, yes, but in a two-dimensional way, because they have sensations and perceptions. So they have, let's say, two ways, two dimensions to perceive the world, two aspects, through sensation and through perceptions. Let's take, for example, a dog who is in a car, in a moving car, who take out his head out of the window. Happily, he sees the electric poles or houses passing by, as if they were walking or moving, as if they were moving. And we do see them in this way, when we are in the car or in a bus or in a train. It seems that all the world passes in front of our eyes, and they leave again. They go by. The higher animals, the superior animals, have sensation and perceptions and sees the world like us. But the intellectual animal, the human being, in addition to sensations and perceptions, we have concepts. Our mind therefore corrects our perception, and it knows that the electric poles that we see passing by do not move, but we are moving. That is how we perceive them, right? If we are in a train or on a bus moving, we perceive that everything passes by outside the window. But it is the concept that corrects what we perceive. We see, for example, very small trees or houses in the distance, as if they measure a few centimeters, a few inches. Our concept corrects our perception, and thus we know that they are small, they see small, because they are very far away. With the concept, with the mind, we therefore correct our perceptions. This is why, if we develop these faculties, which are latent in the human being, we will be able to see the different dimensions of nature. We could then say that there are seven fundamental dimensions, seven worlds which interpenetrate without ever mixing, and which we cannot perceive yet. It is in this physical world, which has three dimensions, that we can capture through the window of our five senses this three-dimensional world with height, depth, and length. In everything that surrounds us, it is a three-dimensional physical world. But beyond this physical world, there exists a fourth dimension, which is the vital world. Beyond the vital world, there exists a fifth dimension, which contains two worlds, which are the astral world and the mental world, the mental dimension. And beyond the fifth dimension, there is the sixth dimension, where we can find the world of will and the world of consciousness. And even beyond that, we have the world of being. There are, therefore, seven worlds, seven spaces, seven dimensions, and nature live with them as bases, as foundations. Many things would be impossible without the existence of these higher dimensions. Even life would not be possible in the physical world if the vital world did not exist. This is why in Gnosis we call it the vital world, because it is the one which gives lives to the physical world. Here then are the seven worlds: physical, vital, astral, mental, the world of the will, or causal world, the world of consciousness of or the soul, and the world of the being. It is the law of seven which organizes nature, the law of Eftaparaparshinok, or the law of seven, which organizes and perfect everything. This is why the seven vehicles, the seven bodies, must develop so that we can move in these seven dimensions of nature. They would be the physical body, the vital body, the astral body, the body of the mind, the body of the will, causal body, and the body of consciousness, or the soul, and the body of being. Ancient Theosophy speaks to us of these seven bodies. Paracelsus, in his text, also speaks to us of these seven bodies, and not only in this text, but throughout the world, throughout history, we are told about these seven dimensions and these seven bodies. For example, on the Tree of Life of the Hebrew Kabbalah, wonderful to study due to its depth, there are sephirots, the 10 sephirots of Kabbalah. Well, the first seven correspond to these seven dimensions and these seven bodies. In the Hebrew Kabbalah, we call Malkut the physical world, Yesod the vital world, Hod the astral world, Netzach the mental world, Tiferet the causal world or the world of will, Hebura the world of the soul or consciousness, and Yesed the world of being. This is what Hebrew Kabbalah tells us. It tells us about the 10th sephirot, but the first seven correspond to the seven dimensions and also to the seven bodies that we must develop. And as if that were not enough, in the millennial India, the sages managed to know these bodies because they had awakened and developed their faculties, and they gave them a name, Stula Sarira, for the physical body. It is thus which was called the physical body in millennial India, in Sanskrit language, the sacred language in India. Lingam Sarira is the name of the body and the vital world. They call the astral dimension Kamas, the mental world, the lower manas, and that of the will, the superior manas. That of the consciousness, they call body, and that of the being, Atman, the ineffable. This is the name in Sanskrit for the seven worlds, the seven bodies. This is the information that has been given to us in the world, and that we could, by gradually developing our faculties, get to know and experience everything that we are talking about here, dear friends. We will therefore study each of the regions of nature and begin with the lower one, the physical world. This physical world that surrounds us, despite so many instruments used and so much research done, because we still think we are very important and knowledgeable about it, because we managed to discover, for example, the blueprint of the human genome, as well as many other things. We actually do not know even a thousandth part of what is really happening in this physical world, in this three-dimensional world. There are still many things that escape our investigations. In this physical world, we live with this body of flesh and blood, with this three-dimensional body, with this material body. It is our physical vehicle through which we move and we live in our physical world. This is the first part, the densest, most material part. In Hebrew Kabbalah, it is called the kingdom. It is said that it is a very special filter because it does not let what is unworthy pass, and the majority of us remain here, in the matter, in the physical world. But beyond the physical body and beyond the physical world, there exists a vital world, or also called the etheric world, that comes from ether. This vital world is the fourth dimension, and Albert Einstein speaks of it to us as hyperspace. This hyperspace, or fourth dimension, or fourth vertical, is the etheric world, the vital world that we know as Eden. More than 18 million years ago, human beings lived in the fourth dimension, in Eden. Adam does not represent a person. Adam represents the millions of human beings who existed in the third human race, the Lemurian race, that the earth had, and also, of course, Eve represents the millions of women who also lived in the Lemur breed. 18 million years ago, we live in Eden, in the four dimensions, and 25 million years ago, everything belonged to everyone. Everyone lived in harmony. Yours and mine did not exist. Everyone could help themselves from their neighbor's tree without him getting angry. We lived completely in harmony with the universe, with the infinite cosmos. But 18 million years ago, we started with a psychological aggregate, with the ego. We fell by, as it is said, eating the forbidden fruit. We abused our sexuality and we misused our sexual energies. We were expelled from Eden, the fourth dimension, and we have been there in this physical world for 18 million years. This is how it happened. But the fourth dimension still exists, even though we currently live in this three-dimensional physical world, the fourth dimension still exists. The paradise is that religions talk about, and which has been called in different ways in the different cultures of the world. It is the same fourth dimension. It is what we know known as Eden. Well, it is in this fourth dimension that the elementals of nature exist. These innocent creatures that before the 18th century we could still perceive from time to time. We are talking about fairies, elves, sylphs, mermaids, titans, pygmies, gnomes, salamanders, undines, nereids, and thousands of other names given to them around the world. So many coincidences that exist in so many cultures in the world that speaks about the existence of these innocent creatures of nature. They exist and they will continue to exist. But it is from the 18th century that our mind has been infested by skepticism and by this disgusting materialism that we have lost the faculty to see, even if it was only from time to time. We are kept from seeing this beauty of the soul of nature. Gnomes and pygmies continue to exist in our plants, in our walls, and in our roof of houses, on the floors, in trees. Sylph and sylphides and sylphids continue to exist in birds, among raptors, why not? Undine and nereids continue to live in lakes, clouds, rain. But we have lost the senses which allow us to perceive them. They continue to live even if we don't believe in them. And these creatures don't care whether we believe in them or not. They continue to exist. These creatures are life of nature, the life of plants. After a thousand experiments, scientists came to the conclusion that plants have sensitivity. The little grandmothers of yesterday have known this for a long time, don't they? Of course, but nowadays our scientists with a lot of electrical instruments, devices and electronics have managed to detect the sensation of plants, and they could see, for example, that when a person damages a plant, the scientists can record an alteration of it in their very sensitive devices. They also noticed that when this same person, in some other time, approached this plant again, but this second time without doing anything, well, they have recorded that the plant reacts because the plant remembers the previous altercation, the previous approaching. The plant remembers that it was the person who had inflicted suffering on it. Many experiments are being done on this subject, and scientists are developing a new theory saying that plants are alive, that plants are capable of feeling things, etc. But our grandmothers of yesterday knew all this for hundreds of years. They also talked to the plant and took care of them as if they were little pets like cats or dogs. My friends, these are elementals of nature. We can't see them, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist. Plants are sentient. Plants are the physical body of the elementals of nature who live in the fourth vertical. They are not prisoners in plant. They are in the four dimensions. Yes, of course, the physical body are the vehicle, like their home. And it is in this way. When we make a tea or an infusion, for example, to cure an illness, or simply to calm down, we must know that what cures us, it is not the corpse of the plant, but the life contained in the plant. So it is worth blessing the plants and not cutting them down suddenly with violence. You have to ask their permission. When we cook, we work with a whole elemental magic. If we went back to these ancient times, we would eat much better because the plants are alive. Minerals also have life. Gold, silver, copper, iron have life in them. This life is found in the fourth vertical, the fourth dimension, in the etheric world, in the vital world. In this vital world is our vital body, of course. This vital body is the one that guarantees the existence of our physical body, of the physical world. Without a vital body, life would not exist. In Gnosis, we say that there are four energies or ethers which form the vital body, and each ether is related to certain functions of our life. We have an ether of life which is related to the aspects, to the phenomena in our body that allow the reproductions of the species. We have another luminous ether, which is in relation to our imagination and our will. We have another reflector ether, which is in relation to our perception and our extra perceptions. And we have another chemical ether, which is related to the changes in our organism, that is to say, with our metabolism. Without these four ethers, life would be impossible. If someone could take away our vital body, we would die instantly, because each atom of our vital body saturates each atom of our physical body, and this is what guarantees the existence of our physical body. It is for these reasons that diseases appear first in the vital body and then descend or manifest into the physical body. Cancer, for example, is caused by a virus from the fourth dimension, and this virus thrives in bodies that are deficient in copper catalase. These bodies are the result of the abuse of our creative energies during a former or present existence. This virus that we call cancer develops in our vital body, and as the vital body guarantees the existence of the physical body, then this cellular disorder that we call cancer occurs in our physical body. All diseases, therefore, first appear in the vital body. If a doctor could perceive the vital body or the aura of his patients not like a charlatan, he is someone who could therefore perceive the vital body or the aura of his patients and could see that the disease is already there, even before it appears in the physical body. A true clairvoyant never says that he sees and never talks about what he sees. A true clairvoyant does not say anything of his faculties. This is one of the main requirements for having a positive clairvoyance. If someone tells you that they see your aura, run as far as you can, because the only thing the person will do is get you into trouble or get your money. If a person tells you that they see the aura, then be sure that they have developed a negative faculty, because as long as we have anger, impatience, intolerance, that we get angry, that we do not know how to wait, that we become anxious, we will not have positive developed clairvoyance. The negatively developed clairvoyance is not useful. Negative clairvoyance is wrong. Negative clairvoyance can see different things at the same time and not see the essential. This kind of clairvoyance does not suit us. If one of us has this negative clairvoyance, should eliminate the clairvoyance and then develop the positive clairvoyance. How can we differentiate between the positive developed clairvoyance and the negative developed clairvoyance? The negative developed clairvoyance has no control. We can suddenly see a shadow passing. Imagine that. We would jump, afraid, don't we? Imagine that you are driving, I don't know, maybe at night, and suddenly you see something, a shadow. You could have an accident. Well, that is a negative clairvoyance, a faculty that we have no control on it, control of that. The faculty of seeing is under our control. If you want to see, you open your eyes. You don't want to see, you close your eyes. You are in control of it. The same happened with the positive developed clairvoyance. If you want to use it, you use it. You don't want to use it, you simply don't use it. So, if there is a doctor or doctors who are listening, thinking about developing this faculty, of course, after some or many years of inner discipline, interior discipline, esoteric discipline. Well, that would be an extraordinary doctor because he could see in the aura the diseases even before they appear in the physical world, in the physical body. So he could therefore make a correct diagnosis. He would be an extraordinary doctor, of course. He would never say that he sees by saying, you know, I see your aura and I see a spot on your liver, etc., etc. No. This is what clowns do in circus, but not a real clairvoyant. So this doctor would make very good diagnosis. He would be a very good professional and he would complete all his studies with these faculties. Realize then that the vital body is amazing. The sage, the Dr. Paracelsus, called it the mumia. It is for this reason that Paracelsus was an extraordinary doctor, because he did not limit himself only to the physical world, but he was able to see the different dimension of nature. So, even though he lived some centuries ago, he was able to see the vital body of his patients. Beyond the vital body exists the astral world. The astral world, to which many uncomplicated definitions have been given, is not so far from us, my dear friends. This astral world is the fifth dimension. In the fifth dimension is the astral world and the mental world, right? The astral world therefore corresponds, it is inside the fifth dimension. And the rest of us, absolutely all of us, every night, go and visit the astral world. We are connected to the astral body, in our physical body, by a cord, which is called the silver cord, the thread of life, the cord of life. And in Sanskrit language, it is called Antakarana. This cord is made of energetic nature. It binds us to the physical body, and it can lengthen infinitely. When we sleep, our astral body separates from our physical body. The physical body remains sleeping in our bed, and at the same time, in the fourth vertical, our vital body repairs it. Our vital body repairs our physical body. It gives new life to our physical body. The vital body works by invigorating and revitalizing the physical body, and this happens during the night or while we are sleeping, as our feelings and thoughts hinder it in this world. We absolutely must leave the physical world. It is a physiological necessity. It's a physiological process, even though we don't have any kind of control over it. The astral body must live so that the physical body is repaired by the vital body, being helped by the different endocrine glands, such as the thyroid gland, which secretes certain hormones which clean our nasal channels. It is therefore a necessity. Our astral body must come out of our physical body every night. It is not at all dangerous, and we do it every night, but we do it unconsciously. We don't know that we are in the astral world, in the astral body. We don't even realize that we are dreaming. Apart from rare exceptions, we do not realize it. If some people said to themselves when they saw something very strange, when they are dreaming, "Hey, I'm dreaming! I am dreaming!" It is because he got aware of it at that moment, that he is aware of what he always have done unconsciously. And it is not dangerous at all. It is not. It is also impossible for another person to slip into our physical body when we are in the astral. That is not true. That is a lie. This was invented so that we would continue to remain hypnotized, so that we would continue to be slaves to the rulers of this world, to the government, to other different people who have no interest in that we awaken our consciousness. They don't want us to know about nature, the universe, or the cosmos. They simply don't want it. They have control over us. They prefer us to be hypnotized, drunken, lustful, adulterous, because in that way, they can dominate us very easily. We should therefore awaken our consciousness in the astral, and it is not at all dangerous if we are conscious in everything we do. If, when we walk in the street, we remain conscious, it is less dangerous, because we have less chance to being run over. If we remain conscious in our work, things go better in the company. We succeed better. Whether we are a doctor, an architect, an engineer, trader, baker, butcher, worker, etc., things would go much better if we do things consciously. And if we realize that we are in the astral world, a world, an entire new dimension, then open up to us. A world which is in reality is already open, but of which we are not aware, and we have been traveling in the astral world since we were born. Dreams are the astral world. To dream is to go out in the astral body. So we all go out in the astral body. Absolutely everyone has dreams. There are people who could say, "I haven't dreamed for 5 years now." We should correct him and say, "My friend, say instead that it's been 5 years since you remembered your dreams. It is not that you don't dream. You do dream, but you don't remember. And that's very different. We have such a stressful life. We identify much, so much, with the world, with our work, with the problems of life, school, studies, that we don't remember our dreams. That we do not remember our dreams does not mean that we do not dream. Dreaming is an astral experience, and it is necessary. If the astral body did not come out of the physical body, we would fall ill. So, every time, and let me repeat it, every time we fall asleep, we go out in the astral body, whether during the night, the morning, during the day, or in the afternoon. When we sleep, we go out into the astral dimension, and no one can enter into our physical body. No one. If someone suddenly wakes us up, nothing happens. We just wake up, and we don't die. The astral body simply returns to the physical body, and that's it. We wake up just as we do every morning. We open our eyes, and that's it. The astral world is a world of symbols, of myths. The astral world has the same language as legends and myths, like that of the Aztec creations, or the myth, the legend of Pegasus in the Greek mythology, or like the myth of the divine twins in the Popol Vuh, or like the legend of Isis and Osiris among the Egyptians. It is a marvelous language with which legends and myths speak to us. This language, the language of dreams, cannot be interpreted literally. Sometimes we can dream of our spouse who is, let's say, cheating on us with another person. We wake up and we play a joke on him. We play a scene by saying, "You were with this woman. I saw her in my dream." My dear friends, dreams must be interpreted. The people we dream about do not represent these people, actually. They are symbols which take the form of them. Let me repeat it. The people we see in our dreams are symbols which take the form of people we know. so we must learn to interpret our dreams. To do this, we recommend the Course of Dreams on our website. To learn how to interpret our own dreams, because the Gnostic instructors do not interpret dreams at all. Everyone must learn to interpret their own dreams, because they correspond to what we personally experience, we personally are living in our everyday lives. We, the instructors, don't know what everyone is living, their problems, their situations, their aspirations. We don't know any of that. So, if we see, for example, in our dreams, if we dream with a furious bull, maybe that is related to a specific problem of a student in his life. So he is the only one who can perceive or translate or interpret that symbol, right? Well, the world of dreams is therefore symbolic, parabolic. It is the same language of the parables in the Bible. It is not literal. It is symbolic. We must learn to interpret these experiences. Everything is inside us. He who succeeds in having a conscious experience in the astral must also learn to interpret it, with the law of analogies, the law of resemblances, the law of correspondences, with the law of opposites, and the law of numbers. You can also request the course of Kabbalah, which can be found in the courses section of our website. We must therefore come to understand this world of dreams more and more. We must study it. This world of dreams is the eternity, where the present, the past, and the future are united in an eternal present. We could then go and see a past experience while being conscious, of course, in the world of dreams. When we simply dream, we dream and that's it. We might have seen a film or consciously heard a clap of thunder which is captured by the subconscious. We dream of it and that's it. That's it. But if we awakened our consciousness, we could go into the past and see and study our previous life and know what we were in our past lives. And know the reason for our present existence, because our present life is the result of our previous life. This is how we get to know the origin of our situations, of our problems. We could also study the history of the world and not accept that we are descended from the monkey, or we descend from the sharks, or that we are told that human beings has only existed on Earth after a million years, or that humans did not live with dinosaurs. We could thus realize many things in the astral world while being conscious, of course. We could also see or visit the future. Young girls could know, for example, who the man who will be her husband will be, and no longer look for him by going out with many men, which is not correct. We could see who our partner will be and wait for them without wasting our time looking elsewhere. We could know so much, but we don't get there overnight. We don't decide to do it the same night, no. These are things that are done after months for many of us. If there is a student who gets to achieve this outcome and succeed in having a conscious experience in the astral world, congratulations! It is possible to do so, but given the level of generations we are currently living in, it may take days or weeks of practice, so we require a lot of tenacity and a lot of patience. Alright? In the astral world, We could witness, for example, higher teachings in wonderful temples of the White Lodge or the White Brotherhood, where there are masters like Buddha, Quetzalcoatl, Hermes. We could attend. They could give us teachings directly. And under no circumstance should we talk about our astral experiences. It is no one's business. It is a very personal, individual, particular experience. And we still have the egos of pride and vanity within us. By talking about these experiences to other peoples, those egos become strengthened. And as they have very dense vibrations, this will cause us to lose these faculties. And then, no one will be interested in these studies, even if we tell them that we can go out in the astral. No, my friends, these are things that must remain personal. If we ever have an experience, it's no one's business. It's very personal. It's like knowledge given from lips to ears. That is to say, it is a knowledge given as it were given from master to disciple, secretly. And we should respect that. We could also study our psychological defects. We could confront them in the astral world. The egos get personified as monstrous and horrifying entities, and we could see them, for example, this ego of pride that we have, having it in front of us. We could know better and better this legion of defects, psychological defects, which characterizes us. We could also talk to our inner father, to our inner mother, because we all have an interior father and mother. Then we could be guided by them directly. They are our true spiritual gurus, and we could be assisted by them. Here in the physical world, they made the effort to assist us, of course, but given that we have our consciousness sleeping, we are not capable of perceiving their orientation. But in the astral world, we could converse, we could talk directly with them. The astral world is governed by the moon. And this is why conscious astral projection are easier in a waxing moon and a little bit more difficult in a waning moon. We could therefore take advantage of this, even if we do this practice every night, and we should. But during a waxing moon, it is a little bit easier because the astral world is governed by the moon and the law of gravity does not exist over there. There is a very easy exercise, and this exercise is to take a little jump with intention of floating every time you see something strange in the physical world. By repeating it, we will repeat it in the astral world. But in the astral world, we will float, we will remain floating. And at that very moment, we will realize that we are in the astral world, that we are dreaming. We must quickly call, invoke our inner father and mother so that they can lead us where we need to go, where we deserve to go. They are the one who will know if we must revisit a past life, if we need to go to a planet like Venus, for example, if we must go and know another culture in its era of splendor, like that of the Mayans, the Egyptians, the Incas, Hindus, and know their mysteries. Our inner father and mother know if we need to receive the teachings of a master, etc., etc. So this is what we recommend to you, to invoke them so that we could make the most of that experience. We can therefore receive direct mystical experience over there. and then have the true, the real faith in the astral world. After that, it will no matter what people, books, authors said about the astral world. We will get to know directly that it exists, that we can visit it. So, beyond the astral world, there is the mental world. In Hebrew Kabbalah, it is called the world of Netzach. Many illnesses, many mental illnesses, come precisely from the mental world, and they get to crystallize in our physical brain. This is why nowadays we have not been able to make much progress in the healing of mental illnesses, because the cause come from the mental world. Imbalances that we make and which affect the mental world. This is the world of the mind, the world of Netzach. Beyond the mental world, there is the world of natural causes, the world of music. Here, one of the masters who took a physical body to teach us was Beethoven. This is why we highly recommend the music of Beethoven, because his music, as Pythagoras said, it is the music of the spheres. He, Beethoven, is a master of the world of natural causes, also called the world of music, the world from which everything comes, the world of Tiferet, and it is governed, it is ruled by Venus. Beyond the world of causes, there is the world of consciousness, the world of body, the world of the soul. It is the world of consciousness. And beyond this world, ruled by the sun, there is the world of the being, the world of Atman, and it's ruled by Mars. All this so that you can have an idea of what is around us, of an idea of what nature really is. The world of the being, the world of the innermost, the world of the Atman, is the world of mathematics. In this world, visiting this world, we could know the number of atoms there are in a table, how many people have conquered the realization, what karma a nation holds. And this is found in the world of Atman. It is the world of mathematics, and mathematics is sacred. It is for this reason that Pythagoras did not admit anyone, just anyone, into his esoteric school if he did not know mathematics. It is therefore the world of being, the world of the intimate, the world of Atman. There you have it, my friends. We really don't know a lot about ourselves and about nature. It is for this reason that we invite you to begin these studies, to discover this beauty of the soul, of nature, ignored by us because of our degenerated senses. But all this is open to us if we propose it to ourselves by having a lot of tenacity, constancy, strength, faith, discipline, and devotion in these teachings, in these practices. This is, my friends, this was our lecture for today. The bibliography we recommend to you to complement this conference is the Book of the Dead. Read it carefully. It is currently in the section of Master Samael Aumbeor here in your website, www.samaelgnosis.net. Also, we recommend you the Book of Gazing at the Mystery, or Looking at the Mystery, to get to know more about the elementals of nature. Dear friends, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you so much, and have a really great weekend. See you.